Hey, it's Ralph here. Q1 is now closing and it probably didn't go as well as you had hoped, but I'm sure your agency is probably telling you that they crushed it. But in reality, it crushed you. If your agency isn't on the same page as you are, if there's something wrong, but you can't quite put your finger on what that thing is, go on over to tier11.com/apply and we'll set you up on a call to show you a better way to look at your business. Not just metrics that make us agencies look good, but something that actually moves the needle and makes you more money, acquires more new customers, and ultimately achieves your vision. Head on over to tier11.com/apply today. Hello and welcome to the Perpetual Traffic Podcast.
The show where we talk about business, marketing, and awkward celebrity entanglements.
I'm Ralph Burns, the founder of Tier 11.
I'm Cosmos, I'm the co-founder of The Driven Mastermind.
And we are very glad you joined us here today.
Don't forget to come hang out with us in our new Telegram group.
Yes.
PerpetualTraffic.com/Telegram.
How many people do we have in there right now?
We have 92 members.
92 members.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and we just started promoting it. And what's really cool about it is Ralph and I go into Telegram with exclusive content and the Telegram members give us feedback on what they want to hear on the podcast. As a matter of fact, the topic we're talking about today came partly from one of these message threads.
That's true. I think we're finding that tactics and strategy on digital marketing is important and useful. We had John Moran on here and he did like the screen share and all the cool stuff that he does. And then Lauren comes on and drops some knowledge bombs and like the latest, greatest tips on meta ads. But it seems to me that the Telegram folks, from what I'm seeing, they like the higher level business stuff and how it relates back
to
marketing.
They like business.
A bit. They like business, yeah, just in business. General. I mean, really, the show is traffic, which is about marketing. The marketing really drives business. So without good fundamental business knowledge, business understanding, knowledge of your numbers, like the marketing doesn't really matter all that much. I mean, that's just sort of window dressing to a certain degree.
Right.
You got to know what you're doing from a business perspective. So today we're talking more about business, specifically about, I think, a problem that a lot of businesses have. And you actually brought this one up because somebody asked you this. And then we sort of went into a long tangent that Kevin had to listen to, our producer, maybe we'll release at some point in time, about how you actually structure your sales and marketing departments. Should they be one? Should they be separate? Should they be completely not integrated? Should they be integrated? Should they be married, sort of, so to speak? Should you have one person in charge of it or two people? Like, how do you do it? And the question was sort of a loaded question that you got from somebody who was in a software business. It was asking about, hey, I need to hire a sales and marketing person to help me scale and grow.
Yeah,
correct?
Somebody dropped a question into one of the masterminds I'm in. And it was an innocent enough question. And hopefully he never listens to this podcast. But it kind of triggered me because he wasn't being dismissive of the task. But he basically said, I need to hire one person for sales and marketing. It's a large software company.
Revenue-wise, what would large be?
I don't know well enough to know, but definitely over like 10 million gross, you know?
Okay.
So
this is
not tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is 0.01% of all businesses in the
eight-figure
range.
Rarified air, as we would say, Ralph. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And even so, you have this organization that's obviously done really well, and you have the leader of the org saying, what one person can do this job, you know? And it's like, man, just sales. Like my sales team is more than this, but it's always been a minimum of two people. I've got my closer and then I've got what I'm going to affectionately refer to as his assistant. And Gabby, I know you're so much more than an assistant. As a matter of fact, we both know Mike really works for you, but I couldn't take the closer and make him do every single intake call, every single qualification or pre-qual, all the vetting, all the research, all the whatever, whatever. It's an impossible job to do that way. So even our little teeny tiny agency, when it was little teeny, 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 tiny, sales was a two-person job. And then as we grew, it's actually expanded because we have different salespeople for different markets and different regions and different size clients, et cetera, et cetera. And that's us. And that's just sales. And I actually think sales is the easier of the two because marketing is such a loaded task. It's like, well, what do you mean? Is this content? Is there organic? Is there video involved? Are we doing paid? Are we doing top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel? Are we doing social? If so, which channels? Just social, dude. Just social. Let's just take social. every one of those channels really, if you're going to do them well, needs an expert. And maybe somebody could be pretty good at a couple of them. You know, like maybe, okay, if you're good at Facebook, you're good at LinkedIn. But then if you're good at Facebook, are you good with Instagram? I don't think so, because I'm good with Facebook. I'm horrible with Instagram. And if you're good with Instagram, are you good with Pinterest? And if you're good with Pinterest, are you good with TikTok? You know what I mean? Like just that. YouTube is unto itself, you need a triple PhD in order to really tackle and own YouTube. So to say I need marketing, and that's just social. What about direct mail, bandit signs, outreach, you know, programmatic? So, and I'm not saying all businesses need to do all of those things. I'm not saying that at all. But no matter how myopic in scope your marketing is, the odds of it being one person when you're that big, and then also to have that person do, oh, on your free time, why don't you also handle sales? Yeah. You know, like it's just unbelievable. I think organizations need to be far more intentional about how they structure their marketing and sales teams.
I think it also depends on what your maturity of level of your business is and how you've grown that business to that level. So for example, a guy I was talking to, a friend of, you know, my sister's really, really good friend who I've known since I was like 8 years old or whatever. And she started her own business and in the aesthetic space. And she's just like really, really good at Botox treatments and Juvederm and like a bunch of these other sorts of things. And I'm like, well, how do you get all your business? She's like, it's totally word of mouth. It's like, I'm completely overwhelmed. I had to open up a second office. I had to do this, I did that. So does she need a sales and marketing department?
Chances are she needs a fulfillment department.
She needs a fulfillment department.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the other thing too, is if so often people are like, oh, we need, you know, they see revenue slow and they say, and it really it's, we need traffic, but it's, we need more growth. We need more top of funnel. We need more sales. We need more customers. And then you peer under the hood and you're like, dude, you're not maximizing the customer base that you do have. So not all revenue problems are sales problems. Very often it's a fulfillment problem.
Yeah. And that's definitely the case for her. I mean, there's only so many hours in the week for her specifically. This is trading hours for dollars or dollars for hours or however you want to put it. Like you can't, you know, you can't slow the spinning of the earth to make the day any longer. You only have 24 hours like everybody else does. Point is that she has a fulfillment issue, but she does not have a sales and marketing issue. Now, once you get to a level of however many offices she might have, then maybe she has a sales and marketing issue. So the next stage for that is that we have a huge, I think it's 30 some odd center, basically in the same industry as her. And we do all their sales and marketing. Well, we do all their marketing. See, I fell into that gap there for a second. We do all their marketing. But we are so dependent on how effective their salespeople are in order for the effect of our marketing to really be the most impactful on their business, which is another whole part to this, which is a real challenge. And how you integrate both together, I think, is a really hard thing for a lot of businesses who do need it. Like, this woman doesn't need sales and marketing yet. Maybe at some point she will. So if you say, hey, I need a sales and marketing person, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But obviously, you're a software person that was asking you this question probably got to the point where referrals and just word of mouth only got them so far. And so after that point in time, hey, I really need to double down on this, because referrals are great. It's a great way to start your business. It's the way that I started. I mean, we didn't have a sales and marketing person for first 2-3 years of our existence. Sales and marketing was me, you know? So there is that too. And then sort of at what time or what point do you transition over to, hey, I now need a salesperson. Hey, I now need a dedicated marketing department because I'm off doing like CEO stuff. So there's all these questions here that I think are perplexing for a lot of business owners. I mean, you deal with this a lot. I think with Solutions 8, you guys have a slightly different clientele in most cases. Like we overlap a lot with some of our like larger customers. Like we only really take sort of that upper middle market, not necessarily enterprise market, but that's really where we focus, which is directors of marketing, VPs of marketing, that sort of thing. Organizations that are a little bit more on the mature side. We do have a lower price division that helps with the sort of the lower market, but the mom and pop, well, you know, local businesses that need Google ads, there's a lot of businesses like that out there. And you need far more salespeople for a service-based business, depending on what your breadth of service really is. If it's small, all the way up to large businesses, you need a ton of people. And you guys have what now? What, 4 or 5?
a little bit more than that because we're in Latin America too. So we have our North American sales team and then our Latin American sales team, which more or less is redundant in terms of roles. And it's just about being Spanish speaking and feet on the ground.
Got it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's all those challenges I think that people face. I guess maybe the question is at what point in time do you need a dedicated sales and or marketing department? And do you actually combine them together? Because at one point in time, we had ours combined too.
You're listening to Perpetual Traffic.
Well, there is no question that when it comes to influence and persuasion in digital marketing, no one, and I mean no one, commands more respect than Dr. Robert Cialdini. If you have never read his books, Influence and Persuasion, I swear you are missing so much in your digital marketing, not only as an influencer and an advertiser, but as just a great marketer. And that's why I'm so excited to invite you to a free webinar where he'll be sharing his latest insights on new e-commerce strategies. Now, alongside Dr. Cialdini, you'll learn from Bass Wouters and the authors of Reputation King, my buddies Scott Brandley and DJ Sprigg. Attendees will absolutely be able to understand exactly how to gain a competitive edge in the marketplace by leveraging online reputation management. Now, that's something that we haven't talked about here on this show all that much. And it's more reason for you to register for the webinar here, which is completely free over at reputationking.com/PT. So join us on April 18th from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific for you West Coasters by registering at reputationking.com/PT. Once again, that's reputationking.com/PT. Cialdini has been a huge influence on me, and I can't wait to see how his new e-commerce strategies resonate with you and how they affect your business in a positive way using reputation management. Make sure that you register for the April 18th free webinar at reputationking.com/PT.
I think the departments have to be different. That's my personal opinion. And here's why I say that. I'm a process guy. So, you know, if you're good with a hammer, you think everything's a nail. But I'm really good with process. And I think a pretty strong and cogent case as to why process should be the defining, not metric, but what would you say? Like, it's the core thesis behind how and why a department exists. Departments are separated by processes and participants. So what processes do you follow and who's involved in that? And marketing and sales have two separate people, groups of people with two separate processes. So I think trying to put them in the same department is really dangerous because imagine just for one example, your marketing people's ClickUp and your sales people's ClickUp. Salespeople, the way that they engage with project management is a travesty. They're very right brain. They're very shorthand. You know what I mean? Like trying to get them to do something and then you look at and sales ClickUp project management would be very narrow. Like you think about the sales Gantt chart, there's not a ton of dependencies. There's probably not even a bunch of subtasks. They might have primary and some secondary tasks where marketing is project management hardcore. So you have primary tasks, secondary tasks, tertiary tasks. Your tertiary tasks are projects under themselves that also have primary, secondary, tertiary. And you want a sales guy to go in there and start clicking around and pressing buttons? You know, like the whole thing comes crashing down. So I think from a management perspective, just from a process perspective, I think sales and marketing have to be two separate departments, but they have to be incentivized the same way. The biggest mistakes I have ever seen in business, and a lot of this is just because of the lens through which I look at business, but I've looked at thousands of businesses now in my entrepreneurial career. The biggest mistakes I've ever seen in business are when your core departments aren't aligned, most specifically sales and marketing. Although operations comes into play here too. Because if, you know, marketing wants the cheapest leads, sales wants the deals that close, operations wants the deals that retain. And if you're incentivizing each of those three departments according to just that level of analysis, you're going to get three very, very, very broken funnels that don't even drop into the subsequent funnel.
I can point back to so many of our problems as a business. If I look back 2-3 years, especially as marketing, sales, operations, like 1-2-3. So that sort of chain of events, in essence, because marketing creates the message, sales then sells it. In essence, like marketing creates the message, hands it off to sales, and then sales sells it, and then hands it off to ops. And each one of those was somewhat broken.
Well, and each one of them bitches about the other one. Sales bitches right. about marketing. Ops bitches about sales.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest fundamental shifts that we as a business, and I'm just using Tier 11 as an example because it's an example of what not to do and what to do, in my opinion, is actually the handoff from sales to operations, I think is, especially in a service-based business where there's lots of moving parts and there's no one-size-fits-all. Any customer that comes to Solution 8, there isn't like a cookie-cutter solution that you use for them on every single business.
There can't be. Yeah.
There can't be. So operationally, like what sales is actually selling and then what ops can actually produce and what they can fulfill on, not necessarily one and the same.
Oh, dude, that's still a big problem. Well, that's a problem too, just based off of the resource that you use to do your audit and your review. Egg on our face, yeah. One of the worst things we ever did for really, really, really high-end clients is we'd bring in John Moran to personally do the reviews. And because he's the most brilliant Google Ads mind on the planet. And he would come in and he'd blow these people away with, here's everything that we could do. But then we'd hand them off to fulfillment. And there were two stories that needed to be told. Number one was, yeah, that's everything that we could do once you've hit some level of stasis, but we need to do the grunt work first, and then B, not everybody's capable of doing what John can do. So it was kind of this 1-2 punch where we were selling what we couldn't fulfill on, which I think is where you're going. I'm sorry I stole your thunder.
No, that's absolutely it. The bridge, I think, from marketing to sales, like marketing and sales, I think need to be separate functions. Let's just sort of settle that argument right now.
Yeah, agreed.
So when we first started, we had a salesperson who was involved in marketing. Did they do some of the marketing? Did they run ads? Did they do any of that? No, I was basically the marketing guy. So I did all the marketing department. There's a point in your life where you probably will be both of those things. If you're a business owner or you're an entrepreneur, you're going to be doing the sales and the marketing. Like we look at a lot of agencies right now, as you know, like we're in an acquisition mode to get to our ultimate goals. I talk to a lot of business owners, they're still doing all the sales, they're still doing all the marketing. They might have a small team that helps out with the social side, whatever it happens to be, but they're usually the ones that are doing the sales. So that's the owner operator. At a certain point in time, getting that, I always had this post-it note on one of these, actually it was different monitors, but it's like, what's the one thing I did today that I never want to do again? Mm. And it was, the last thing that I let go of, above all else, was the selling part because I actually enjoyed it. I've got 25 years of sales experience, so I was fairly good at it, but I wasn't as good as I could be if I was dedicated to it.
Right.
And I realized that that was the one thing that I really needed, and that took us to a next level of scale. I think that doubled. As soon as I had that realization, like if you're a business owner, you're in like the you know, six-figure, million-dollar range, whatever it happens to be, and then you're trying to get to that next level, and you're doing all your selling for you, you're doing all the primary sales, as soon as you actually have someone, or at least assisting you. So first, we started off with an assistant, and then it turned into a full-blown actual salesperson. And then it was like a B2C salesperson first. Then we realized, well, we're actually really not a B2C company. We're actually a B2B company. So we switched to a true B2B salesperson, which you do have to in our industry, in a service-based business, if they're US-based, you got to pay up for them and you got to pay them commission and you got to have the commission be in line with your goals as a business. And you got to have those commissions in alignment with not only your goals with business, but also how your other people are compensated. So there was this progression of steps. But as soon as, for me personally, as soon as I separated out sales, I all of a sudden could focus more on the marketing. That was my thing. But I'm a marketing guy. So that's how it made sense to me. But that was one of the first hires that I made a long time ago. And I used to bring him around to conferences and everything. And, you know, he's a great guy. He sort of ran its course, you know, the commission structure that I paid him like, I think I paid him like 5 or 10%. On everything into perpetuity.
Dude, I'll do that job. I'll do that right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was like I'll the take greatest. A job. I was like, oh my God, I'm giving away like 5% of the entire, like all the revenue.
Yeah.
Like that was how it was comped. And like he had a base salary. Dude, and so forth.
That's half of most agencies' margins.
I know. It was insane. And I was like, dude, this is why we parted ways. We're still friends. But my point was, it's like, I can't pay you this way anymore.
Yeah.
And I can't give you a pay cut because you're used to getting paid a certain way.
Yeah, I know. I've had that experience where you realize you've over-indexed and then you try to correct, but now the person's so used to where they were that there's nothing about it that'll fix it. Even if they can't go get a job paying them the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's challenging. That's a big chunk. But anyway, that was like our first step. And then after that, I was continuing doing the marketing, but then we eventually got to that level where we had too many people on staff and I couldn't handle it anymore. And so we basically hired from within internally for our marketing person. So now they are absolutely separate, but they're so in bed together. Like we have a calls, like when they're on the same calls, but each one of the heads of the departments manages that individual department, but they're joined at the hip. So I've found that transition to be easier personally. I've found the sales handoff to ops much more challenging, which is a whole other conversation, which we've worked on for the last year. And I think we've figured it all out. And it's working incredibly well. But sales and marketing just on its own just do need to be separate. But it depends on where you are in your business. And where that point is, I think it's going to be different for every business.
100%. I have something bullish to say, which is I think that all three departments should be incentivized according to the same metric. And I know what that metric is. There's one data point, there's one metric that outpaces and is more important than all other metrics when it comes to this particular discussion. I'd be interested as to whether or not you'd agree or disagree with this, Ralph. But I think it's the lifetime value of a customer. I think it's hard to comp people this way, especially if you're a new business or a small business, but on a long enough timeline, marketing, sales, and ops should all in some way be tied to LTV. Because if you try to tie them to anything else, here's the thing is everybody's going to game the system so they make the most money. And so should they. That's the way that this works. It's what we're doing. That's what business is. Business is a game where you make money. And the better you are at the game, the more money you make. So if you put a game in front of your people that says lowest cost per lead, you'll get shitty leads. If you do cost per acquisition of a customer, lowest CAC, you'll get shitty customers. You know, if you do most customers closed, if it's a quantity over quality, like there's nothing you can put in front of them outside of LTV, in my opinion, that doesn't have a cost attached to it on the other side.
Yeah, well, how do you do it though? So give me for example, I'm with you on that because it is vitally important. Like that is a super important statistic for you as a business owner. But like, how do you actually do it?
Yeah, well, I think it's like very heavily dependent on your business model, right? So like if you're in SaaS, it becomes way easier. Honestly, if you're in SaaS and e-com, although e-com I think needs a little bit less in the way of sales. It needs marketing operations. But we'll say regardless, SaaS and e-com, the benefit you have there is your numbers are so readily accessible. It becomes really easy to comp people at the end of every year or even quarterly based off of where they're benchmarking year over year. So you factor in retention to those bonuses and it becomes a force multiplier. And it's, you know, hey, if we're retaining, because retention and LTV are effectively the same thing, right? So if we're retaining better than we have been, then the bonus goes up. And if it's worse than we have been, then the bonus goes down. I think for service-based businesses, it's a little hard. We did it, and here's a crappy way that we did it. I knew 50% of my customers canceled in the first 90 days. And I used to sell that way. I'd say, hey, 50% of all Google ad campaigns fail in the first 90 days. It's not going to be us that fails. It's not going to be Google that fails. It's going to be something about your business. This is especially for people that were brand new to Google because they weren't used to the cost per lead or they weren't used to how aggressive customers were. They weren't used to how good their competitors were at selling those customers, et cetera, et cetera. So I was going to lose half my customers in the first 90 days. We got a little bit better at that moving forward because of what I'm about to say. So what I did is I told my sales guy, you don't get commission until day 90 plus one. On day 91, you get a great big shot in the pocket. And it was significant. And so he started to sell with that in mind. He actually didn't want to bring you on if you weren't going to last 90 days because it was a massive waste of his time. And he had to help, you mentioned the handoff, he had to help with the handholding past closing the deal. And I gamified the system towards retention.
Retention is it.
Right?
I mean, that's everything. Because if you're, I don't care how great your sales and marketing machine is bringing stuff in on the front end, but if you aren't holding on to it and retaining it on the back end, then all that work on the front end is just going to go for naught.
Dude, retention's the whole game. That's just especially in the agency space. But even I shouldn't even say that. I don't think that caveat applies, actually. It's especially in every business ever. You know, if you're not retaining your customers, that leaky bucket, everybody should have, we have this at Needle Marketing, the Montessori agency that I own. We have a full-time retention specialist. Her only job is to sit around loving on clients, reaching out, seeing what else we can do better, seeing if there are any cracks, seeing if anybody's forgot anything or lost anything or dropped any balls. It's all she does, because the retention of those clients is worth so much to me. And to be honest with you, I'm obsessed with Montessori schools. And so there's something a little bit more to it for me. I want to make sure that schools are successful. But even so, it's not an inexpensive role to hire for per se. You know, I mean, it's equivalent to one FTE. But if she saves me one client a year, she's paid for herself, because one FTE equals one client in this particular business model. So I think everybody should have a retention specialist, at least one. You should probably, if you're big enough, have a retention department.
Well, I mean, we're talking about stuff in the agency space. I don't think this is,
you do this
dissimilar
in SaaS for sure.
Any business.
Yeah. Home services.
Really?
Professional services.
Home services. SaaS. Yeah. It's the whole thing.
Dude, I think e-com misses this massively. If somebody buys your shit, you know, we've got a client that does a certain type of a consumable food, and I won't say who because I'll be giving away. We've actually done episodes on them in the past. But people are ravenous for their food. Once you've bought once, you've tried it. Once you've bought twice, I know you liked it. Anybody who's bought twice and hasn't bought again, man, is that an opportunity. It's like, I know you tried it. I know you liked it. What happened? And chances are, to be honest with you, time marched on. They forgot. Something changed. They went on vacation, whatever. But I just feel like having a dedicated person do nothing but reach out to people that used to buy and haven't bought anymore. At an absolute minimum, it's great market research. They can say, yeah, it doesn't taste as good as it used to, or we don't like the new flavor, or, you know, it got more expensive, or insert objection here. But if you're not doing that in the e-com space, I think that's the type of customer intelligence and retention intelligence that it can't be copied. You can't get it any other way. You
yes.
just can't. You can't send NPS scores. You can't send customer surveys. I forget who this was that I was talking to. I was talking to one of our customers who's high-end e-com, and they're kind of known in their space. And he's like, I used to call customers directly personally. And the customers would be thrilled to hear from them. They're like, I can't believe I'm on the phone with you. Because you become a little famous in everybody's mind, especially when they see your face on shit. And he's like, I got more input and insight on my business doing that than any other way, times 1,000. I'm paraphrasing what he told me, but that was more or less the gist of it. So you don't think about that when you think about sales. I think that's more important than sales. And then you're like, well, what would that cost me? It cost you what a full-time employee cost you. Well, would that be more effective than just taking the FTE salary and put it into ads? Had to be, right? Dude, here's something really bullish for an agency owner to say. I'd say cut your advertising budget down by whatever it would cost you to hire a retention specialist.
I think it's the most important, like this conversation has gone from sales to marketing, from marketing to handing off to operations and then to retention.
We did because the whole thing, Ralph. We've gotten all the way to the bottom.
No, but it's all related.
It's all related.
It really is. Yeah. I think people focus on the sales and the marketing side because that's top of funnel.
Well, that's also what jackasses like us sell.
Right.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of podcasts out there about customer retention. The customer retention podcast. Here we are. It's kind of a boring subject.
I'm already bored. I'm bored hearing myself talk.
I'm bored about it. But I do know this, is that we did an analysis in 2022 of all the customers that we lost. And we found that most of them, 90 some odd percent, it was right around 90%, first 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
So we realized, and I still have angry people that, hey, we have not been perfect throughout our
years.
Dude,
I have been perfect.
I had some jackass on LinkedIn trolling me around on every post that I was doing, because he was the unfortunate casualty of a system that back 2 years ago didn't work because what we were doing were sales and marketing people.
Yeah.
What am I? I'm a sales and a marketing guy. What was I focused on? Sales and marketing. I was not focused on retention. We had one guy helping out, but basically we called him client success. It's like, what's important to us? Client success is important. We put one guy on it. We have a marketing department that has 5 people and a sales department that has 3 people. So what's really actually important? If you look at FTEs, obviously sales and marketing is way more important. We realized that's a huge mistake.
That's funny.
So we restructured, and I have to explain this to like our team all the time. We restructured to the point where we now have client success department that their entire job is retention. Their entire goal is not only retention, but it's just
loving on clients.
The idea of customers can't live without us, or clients can't live without us. And it's doing the little things. It's not necessarily just producing the ROAS and all that other bullshit. It's like, now we talk obviously more about NCAC. And, you know, we had John Moran on here a couple of weeks ago talking about all of that, which we'll leave links in the show notes. But that's performance-based stuff. What we found is that people were leaving us because we weren't in alignment with what their goals were. They didn't think that we actually cared. They didn't think that we were the ones that were actually in their best interest trying to figure out a way to grow their business outside of just doing their sales and marketing, or just doing their marketing. The point was, is that we looked at our metrics. We said, we have a hole in our game here. And the most important change that we have made in the last year, and I do credit my COO for implementing this, is like, you guys are just, you're bringing people on. You're like throwing it over the wall from sales over to ops. And then ops is like, what do I do with this? So now we insert the CSO, the client success owner, as a part of the sales process very early on, even when the audit and then the scoping and then the pricing is being done. So the last half of the sales process, aside from the initial discovery call, which is done primarily just with the salesperson, but it's like that next step, is all sales being married now with ops plus client success. Mm. And that's been a difference maker. It's an absolute game changer. It's a freaking game changer. So look at your organization. Are you looking at these things? Have you done a retrospective where, if you have businesses, if you have people that are buying from you over and over again, if you have a repeat customer business, are they coming back? And if they aren't, then why? Figure out where that problem is. And what we realized, it was the onboarding process. Because it was sales selling one thing and ops not really understanding what sales was selling. And so as a result of that, we bridged that gap with this CSO insert. And these people are not cheap, by the way, because they're really, really good at like human interaction. They're great at, you know, I know you have a lot of folks like in your, I believe it's like your CMs, that are extremely well-versed in like EIQ. Mm. Like, they just get people. Like, this is their whole thing.
That's,
like,
yeah, that's love. Really their job. It's not to know marketing, it's to know people.
It's not digital marketing.
Yeah.
Having digital marketing background is helpful and useful. However, it's that skill. And plus, what we've also found out is it's a leadership skill. The CSOs that lead are the ones that really succeed, because they bring along the entire team. The CSO actually runs everything indirectly. They have their own boss, and the media buyers and the creative people, they all have their own bosses. But the point is, the CSO kind of runs the whole game, and you need some leadership with that. And that was a huge, because when we changed our model, we weren't quite sure what we were looking for. And we realized, all right, these are the characteristics. Like, it's not about digital marketing, like how good they were with Google ads or Facebook ads. Nice to know, but it was leadership, and it was EIQ. And it was just this passion for success when it comes to customers.
I love that, dude. I love that you have an entire department dedicated to that too. I feel like if you're listening to this, that's the question, is where can you start? You don't need a whole department. Right. You might not even need a whole employee yet. But, you know, what about like a day where a member of your staff just goes through and reviews where clients are, reviews risks? We do something, my CTO put something together. It's absolutely brilliant. It's inside of our ClickUp. All the client managers have to tag every client with what's effectively a temperature. It's a spectrum, but on one end of the spectrum is they're amazing, they couldn't be happier, everything's great, that's green. On the other end of the spectrum is everything's on fire, that's bad, it's red. And then everything in between. And our strategy team goes through, we call them risks, and there's pod risks, which means this is a risk just within this pod, but it's not such a big risk that we need to ascend it. And then there's company risks. Mm. And twice a week, one time every week, all strategists go through the pod risks. And then 2 days later, the pod risks, I think, are on a Tuesday, and then the company risks are on a Thursday. And on a Thursday, it's all hands. The whole company, all the smartest people in this organization of almost 100 employees, are sitting there looking at every single risk and deciding what we're going to do about it. So if you can't afford or don't want to build out a team, maybe build out something along those lines. Like, what's the event? What's the day? What's the meeting? What's the protocol? What's the SOP? So that you're actually building, and I love what you said, Ralph, too. It's like, you know, what's important to us? Well, where do we spend our money? And, you know, if you're not spending time and money in retention, then retention is not very important to you.
True. True. We would say, yeah, oh, we want our clients to have success. Well, did we really? That's a hard thing to admit because it was not true.
It's an uncomfortable mirror.
It's not a comfortable mirror to look in. And so, you know, there were cases where our CS individual was just, all he was doing was just putting out red fires. Now, with this system, what we find is that the reds don't come up. We look at it every week as a leadership team, which I'm meeting with in a half hour here. So it's like one of the metrics that we look at. It's like a red, yellow, green report. I forget which software he uses. Damn, I'm going to have to like remember these things. But anyway, it's a software that actually, I'll put links in the show notes if I remember what it is. I'll have to ask my COO. But it's basically, it's a software that auto-generates and it figures out sentiment, customer sentiment based upon communication. And then it looks at that using an AI formula that at least gives an indication as to where things are going. And then obviously a human checks it. And then whether or not it's accurate or inaccurate. And we've actually found ways in which to pick up on yellow signals that might be turning red and keep them in yellow and then put them back to green because of this whole system. And that's the whole deal.
And you monitor every client phone call using this?
It does not monitor phone calls.
Every client interaction. My mind went to call tracking metrics because in my mind, I'm like, call tracking metrics does that with phone calls. So I just started thinking on that line. But you monitor every client communication with this?
On client communications.
Yeah. Every single one of them.
My understanding is that primarily in Slack.
Dude, that's badass. What a great SOP. That's a little gold nugget right there. If you're listening to this, is that proprietary, Ralph? Where does that come from?
So we just started using it, Kasim. I will leave a link in the show notes, like a big open loop there as to what it is. But I think this is the kind of stuff that's important. So look at your business, no matter what it is. I love your idea, like hiring just one person. If you're an e-commerce business, that human touch, this could be your social media manager in addition to what they're normally doing for social media. I mean, I look at a social media manager.
Them for social media content, you know?
100%. It is hard to acquire a customer, all right? Are we in agreement on that? Like, it's hard to sell them. No, it's hard to market to them. It's hard to sell them, you know?
It's hard to keep them.
And it's, but once you get them, I think keeping them is actually easier. It really is. If you dedicate the resource, it depends on how good your product is.
If you have a restaurant, it's harder to keep the customer every time they come because the experience can only ever get worse. You know what I mean? It's like, you're never going to be able to top the best experience they have or the reason that they keep coming. So there are things like that that are repetitious. The other things, landscapers, your pool guy or gal, just assume people are going to burn off because once they get pissed, they quit or they cancel. There's no way to elevate those services or it's harder.
Yeah. And they'll never tell you what the reason was.
No. I fired so many pool people, I never tell them.
Yeah. I don't have a pool guy, but I've had a lot of landscape people.
Yeah. My landscaper is actually pretty good. And he fixes my sprinklers. So
he fixes your sprinklers.
Yeah.
Well, I can't fire my sprinkler guy because he's part of like my family. That's what happens when you have 72 Sorrentis in Sagamore Beach, Cosmo. Oh my God. There's one for every business.
Well, I was about to say the Sorrentis too, that, you know, they make you offers you can't refuse.
It's a sketchy crowd to begin with. You know, the big Italian family that I thought I was getting into. No mob ties, unfortunately. I really
That's
was hoping
for
that.
That's what you would say, Ralph.
None
That's
whatsoever.
What they trained you to say. Before we wrap, we have one question from our Telegram group. Nicholas Giordano, I'm sorry I butchered your last name, asks, what's a CRM you would recommend for people with below average tech skills? Trying to find a CRM that my company can use while keeping in mind the sales team who are unaccustomed to tools like CRM. It's so funny because that's what I was talking about. Salespeople suck at tech.
Yeah, they do. I'll answer that question in two parts. We're now on HubSpot, which we really do like, but it's taken us an enormous amount of time to get to the point where we actually really like it. I think one of the best, cheapest methodologies, especially for your first one, and having been in sales for a long time, is
Dude, I was just going to say the exact thing. I pulled up Pipedrive for that reason. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's the easiest to use. It's super, super, super basic. If they can't use Pipedrive, fire them because they're stupid.
Sick. Like we outgrew it, really.
I don't even really like it, to be honest with you, but it's so basic and easy to use.
I didn't really like it either. Yeah.
Works great.
But it does work. You need something like that in order to maintain your, just a level of this chaos, really, in sales and in marketing. And it's all about follow-up.
Yeah.
I would not say it's a great retention tool, but I would say it's a pretty darn good
sales tool.
Top of funnel stuff. So that is this week's show. Make sure that you do join our Telegram group. Well, what's the URL for that one, Qasim?
PerpetualTraffic.com/Telegram.
Yeah, absolutely. We could go into a long discussion on this in the Telegram group, because I know folks are struggling with this all the way through. We started off as a marketing to sales, and then we went into ops, and then we went into client success. Like, every part, analyze your business and figure out where the holes are. It's just such a simple thing to do. And that's what changed for us. Like, we did the analysis, we did the hard work and figured out, okay, this was our problem and this is where we're going to spend the money to fix it. And hopefully you can do the same with some of the tips that we've given you here today. So make sure that you do subscribe and leave a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. And of course, let us know what we can do better over at perpetualtraffic.com/better. Follow me on LinkedIn and Qasim on every social media channel known to mankind at Qasim Aslam. Although he's not the only Qasim Aslam in the world.
But I am the best.
But you are the best.
Yeah, those other guys suck.
Yeah, all those other guys, just don't follow them, but follow you. And check out our YouTube channel, of course, at perpetualtraffic.com/YouTube. All resources and show notes are over at perpetualtraffic.com. So on behalf of my awesome co-host, Qasim Aslam.
Peace.
Till next show. See ya.
You've been listening to Perpetual Traffic.